All right, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Double Line Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here with Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, Eric. It's just after the close here on April 12th, 2024. Thanks for standing in for Mr. Mayberry. In last week's episode, Mayberry had been talking about March Madness and the conclusion that I believe was to take place on Monday, when he was going to be on an airplane and he was going to come in and tell us what the results were. I didn't bother reading or watching, so I guess we can, if anyone's interested, we can wait till next week to get Mayberry's update. But I did see the Masters were going on this weekend, so maybe he can update us on that as well. But with that, let's go ahead and jump into what appeared to be a pretty bloody week in the markets, at least from a traditional asset standpoint. You and I have been talking about this pain trade that had been taking place over the course of this week. A lot of it based on this, what we've been calling inflation week, given the triple data prints around various forms of inflation measures that came out this week. But starting out with the S&P 500, that's down 1.5% on the week-to-date basis, down 2.5% on a month-to-date basis. And on year-to-date, we still have a positive return, pretty strong still. Given what we've seen in the last week, it's still very strong for the year-to-date, up almost 8% on the year-to-date basis there. But when I go back to this week's window of time, across the board, I'm seeing a negative sign and red color in front of each of the 11 sectors underlying the S&P 500. The best performer here appears to be the technology sector. That was down 50 basis points. The worst performer here on the other bookend is financials, which is down 3.6% on the week. Looking across the different broader measures of the U.S. equity market, nothing was really spared here either. Looking at the Russell 1000, which is another representation of large cap U.S. equities, that was down 1.6%, similar in line with the S&P 500. But the small caps, as measured by the Russell 2000, was down over just about, let's call it 3%. On the week-to-date basis there. And then if we look at it, the difference between growth and value as measured by the Russell 1000 growth, that was down 70 basis points week-to-date. Russell 1000 down 2.9% week-to-date. And then let's take a look here. In case you forgot, about that little area of the U.S. economy, the regional banks here, that's so far it's down, let's see, just over 3% on the week, but a whopping negative 13% down year to date. So I say in case you forgot, because over the course of 2023, I was looking at earlier, kind of down at the lows around March or April of last year, it got down as much as 30% on the year to date basis through that point in 2023. But then it rallied back in the last quarter of 2023 to end the overall year of 2023 flat in terms of performance. So this is just a little reminder out there for folks that perhaps there are still problems in, some parts of the financial system, some parts of the investment markets that's being represented here by regional banks. We'll see how this progresses over the course of the year. But moving over to, let's see here. Let's move over to the fixed income market, looking at it. Let's step back. Let's step back here. I'll bring it back to the equity side. I did mention the inflation week that really kicked off, and I'm not going to steal too much of your, or hopefully I won't steal too much of your thunder here, Eric, but with the CPI print dropping on Wednesday, I saw that the S&P 500 was going pretty much flat going into that print. So through Tuesday, it was flat on a week-to-date basis. But as soon as the CPI dropped that morning before markets opened, I saw that the S&P 500 was down 1% on that day alone, but it tried to rally, or it did rally back on Thursday. But then today we're down just on Friday alone is down just about 1.5%. So it pretty much just got beat back a little bit today. But it also appears, in addition to perhaps what may be inflation week, we did have a increase in rhetoric around geopolitical risk. So that has been attributed to today's sell-off, as well as it was down again about 1.5% on the S&P just today alone. But with that kind of as the backdrop, looking at it from the perspective of rates, treasuries also were performing quite well going into the close on Tuesday before the Wednesday CPI print. They actually rallied a bit, I think by about 10 basis points. But on Wednesday alone, the 10-year Treasury yield had a range of around 20 to 25 basis points in the low yield to the high yield for that day, but ultimately closing about 20 basis points higher just on Wednesday alone. So, you know, here on the double line minutes, we talk a lot about inflation and, you know, and trying to ascertain what the expectations will be for Fed policy off of the most recent prints. And this is kind of the market's interpretation, at least for this week, as we receive that data coming in. So we did get a bit of a rally today in yields, but again, that part, I believe, is being attributed to some of this, again, heightened geopolitical risk that we're seeing in the headlines that really started at the beginning of this week, but this seems to have continued to rise over into today. But looking at it here, across the tenors that we typically cover with the Treasury yield, starting with the 2-year Treasury note, that had closed the week here at a yield of 4.89%. That's up 14 basis points over the previous week. And looking across here, I'm seeing that's up 64 basis points in terms of yield. Here I'm talking about the changes in yield, up 64 basis points higher in yield versus where it ended the year in 2023. So we started, or we kind of ended 2023 with a yield of 4.25%, and we're at 4.89, to kind of give you a sense of some of the pain that we're feeling here in the fixed income markets. Similarly, when I look at the 10-year Treasury note, that started the year with a yield of 3.88. It closed today with a yield of 4.52. So it's just 64 basis points higher on yield over the end of last year. On the week, it's also 12 basis points higher as well. So the pain trade in that from both windows of time for the 10-year Treasury note. And then looking at the bond, it closed today with a yield of 4.63%. That's up 60 basis points over the close of 2023, where it ended on December 31st, 2023, at a yield of 4.03. And it's up 8 basis points over where we closed last week in terms of the yield. So across the board, you have about 60 basis points, 60 to 64 basis points higher in yield over the course of the 2024 thus far. Pretty much everything has elevated almost in a parallel shift on the year-to-date basis. So what that means here, in the broader basket of fixed income, the U.S. aggregate has a negative handle in front of it. It's down about 0.75 points on the week-to-date basis. I did mention there was a bit of a rally today. It's up about 20 basis points just today alone, but that wasn't enough to overcome the weakness that we felt post CPI print. And then on a month-to-date basis, the ag is down 1.75%, and a year-to-date, it's down about 2.5% through April 12th today. And when I look at it here on a year-to-date basis across the broad cohort, actually, let's start with the week-to-date first. Similar to what I just you know, laid out for the S&P 500, every sector within the cohort that we look at for the fixed income market is also in the red. On the week-to-date basis, the best performer here is the floating rate asset of bank loans, below investment grade, but has a floating rate coupon to it. So that is down about 10 basis points on the week. The worst performer on the other bookend is emerging market and sovereign debt. That's down about 1.5 points. And then we have a sprinkling of, you know, somewhere around negative 70 to negative 90 basis points for the remainder when you take a look at both the government-guaranteed assets of the U.S. Treasury market, as well as agency mortgage-backed securities. But then also when you take a look at it from the credit standpoint, below investment grade, high yield corporate credit down 60 basis points and IG down 90 basis points there. So on the yielded year-to-date basis, we do have three positive sectors here, with bank loans again being the top performing sector, up 1.5%. When I take a look at EM, that's pretty much just flat. I'm seeing positive 1 basis point there, so I'll give it the positive number there. But I'd call that pretty much flat. That's, you know, one day's move erases that if things go south for EM. Same with high yield, that's up 25 basis point. That's about a day's move that could wipe out that positive print. So as we close out this second week in April, Just a little bit over three, just a little over 3 months into 2024, it seems to be somewhat of a bad start for the fixed income market here. And moving down to the commodity market, commodities have a positive print in front of them for the week to date, up about 10 basis points. When I take a look at the year-to-date basis, that has a positive print of 6%. Month-to-date, pretty strong month so far, and thus far for the broad-based commodity basket, the Bloomberg Commodity Index, it's up just under 4% on the month-to-date. So within that, I guess some people would be surprised given the move that we've seen in WTI crude oil, but that was down about 1.5% this week for the front-month futures contract of WTI crude oil. But still just about $86 barrel of crude oil there. On the year-to-date basis, that that price return is a positive 19%. You got a little bit of the positive roll yield given the shape of the futures curve there. So the overall year-to-date return for an investment in WTI crude oil is somewhere in the low to mid-20 handle type of return. Something that's been going on a winning streak lately has been gold. Really has taken off in 2024. Right now, I see it at $2,350 a troy ounce, up about 0.75 points on the week-to-date basis, up 13% on the front-month future price basis for gold. So we'll see how much longer that trend can go, but you can just see how that just really the rally has been quite strong, to say the least, in that. But it's difficult a bit to see which hat gold is wearing today. If it's wearing its flight safety hat, which you can say yes, given the events that are maybe transpiring, is it wearing its inflation hat? Yes, you can say, given some of the economics data surprises that we had seen, for the February prints of inflation baskets. We'll wait for the macro section to hear more about the inflation prints for March. From that perspective, we'll see which one it is wearing here. But with that wrap up of the markets, Mark, Eric, do you want to kick us off on what happened on the macro front?
Yeah, definitely a pretty heavy week from a standard asset allocation perspective, with both equities and bonds getting crushed for different reasons. Kind of what was the catalyst there? Well, as you mentioned, CPI, it was kind of all eyes on CPI. Monday and Tuesday there wasn't much going on, all quiet on the markets front. But Wednesday, April 10th, we got CPI. Tuesday, we got the NFIB small business optimism print for March, and it came in at 88.5. Realistically, it was a little below the estimate of 89.9, but it wasn't a market mover. The market mover was the CPI print in April, which came in at 0.4% month over month for March, which was above the estimate of 0.3%. And it was right on the prior, which is above the Fed's desired range. The CPI ex food and energy print for March came in at 0.3%. The prior there was 0.4%. Looking at CPI on a year-over-year basis, you saw it coming at 3.5%, which was above the prior, above the estimate. CPI ex food and energy year-over-year came in at 3.8, similar to the prior of 3.8. So pretty bad prints across the board there. And if you dig in and look under the hood, what you'll see is that you had a month-over-month contribution from core services, it increased to 0.4% from 0.35%. So that's kind of a scary thing if you're trying to get CPI under control, because services tend to drive a lot of CPI inflation. You look at medical care services, and they increased 0.5% month-over-month. Transportation services also remain strong at 1.5% month-over-month. So those are kind of bearish prints if you're the Fed and you want CPI to get contained. Another thing that I found interesting was auto insurance was up 2.6% month over month and 22.2% year over year. And, anecdotally, I've been reading a lot about how people's home insurance premiums are getting jacked up because of environmental risk and reconstruction risk and construction risk. You know, if like a hailstorm hits your house and breaks your roof, the cost to replace that roof has increased a lot. And when you take into effect that we just have more volatile weather patterns going on, it creates a scenario where home inflation prices from an insurance standpoint are probably going to be impacted. So I definitely came away with this as a pretty, it was a pretty big hit to market expectations, as you saw in the readjustment of rates. I mean, it was a huge readjustment of the cut probabilities and the rates market, which you saw kind of come in a little bit today because of geopolitical risk going into the weekend. But this was a bearish print. What do you think, Mr. Lau?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I think the markets were looking at it from the perspective of, okay, we've had at least two consecutive prints of CPI that have come in, you know, above expectations. And that was kind of time, you know, in terms of the timing of that, that kind of came out around the period where people were still, the market at least was still kind of just off of that six cuts in 2024 kind of narrative. But as those started to trickle through, the market started to reprice the Fed funds, or the Fed funds futures market started to reprice in terms of the number of Fed policy actions that might take place over the course of the year through the rate policy there. But, you know, coming into this one, I think people were feeling the expectation that perhaps there would be another, you know, beat. And we certainly saw that. I guess it wasn't fully priced into the market, despite what I just said, because of the action that we did see in the course of, you know, Wednesday's action. And then, you know, Thursday was a little bit better. And then Friday's action again here, although, you know, we're mixing in a little bit of geopolitical risk here. But certainly on Wednesday, just that whipsaw nature that we saw across both equities as well as the bond market says that for the most part, the market wasn't quite pricing it into their expectations. But you had to come into this, you know, this March print thinking that there, the likelihood that there would be a beat, certainly the probability wasn't very low coming into the after this, you know, the first 2 months of this year seeing those beats. So it will be interesting to see it shake out. I like to think about things more, you know, from the knee-jerk reaction that market participants initially have to the data, and then letting it sort itself out over the weekend, just seeing, you know, how the week progresses post these big prints that come out, and just see as the market takes a breather, you know, the 2 day timeout for the most part on Saturday and Sunday, and then they readjust their thinking the following week. So we'll see what that holds next week when we come back to the office.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and we're just gonna have to wait and see. We got the FOMC meeting minutes on Wednesday as well. Those came out, and really nothing new there. I would say they're just, the Fed continues to reiterate that they want more confidence that inflation is moving towards their 2% target. And I think that's the key word, is confidence. And that's why you saw a readjustment of the forward path of interest rate cuts, the probabilities there, because the market isn't confident that the Fed has confidence to cut when you're seeing inflation prints like the one we saw on Wednesday. We did get a little bit of good news on Thursday. We got the PPI final demand month over month for March, and that came in at 0.2%, which was below the estimate of 0.3%. So that's some positive news, and it was well below the prior, which was a huge surprise, the upside of 0.6%. And if you kind of look at PPI ex food and energy, the month over month was also 0.2%. So taking a look at that on a year-over-year basis, the PPI final demand year-over-year is at 2.2%. So that's a bit of positive news, and you saw that in the markets, a little bit of stabilization on Thursday. So definitely, I think the CPI has a lot more gravitas than the PPI, but it was a moderating print that didn't corroborate what was happening in the CPI.
Yeah, and with, you know, CPI and PPI, those are really the big data points for people to get their head around PCE. You know, we always talk here on Minutes how the PCE, for the most part, doesn't, you know, often comes in at expectations, and there typically isn't any material surprises out there. So with this round of CPI and PPE, and it seems like from what I saw across street research was that the consensus for this upcoming March print for PCE, which I believe comes in the last week of April here, that seems to be pricing in at around a plus 0.3% month over month, which would make it flat to the previous period's print in February there. So I think people are a little bit sanguine in terms of the prospects of what PCE looks like when it comes out in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, it comes out April 26th. So definitely, the economists are baking the CPI and PPI data into their PCE forecasts. And like you mentioned, it helps converge that number. We got initial jobless claims Thursday. Labor market continues to be strong. Print was 211,000, below the estimate of 215,000, below the prior of 222,000. We got continuing claims at 1,817,000, a little above the estimate of 1.8 million, but still in line with the range that it's been in. So nothing to report there, really, no cracks to be seen. On Friday, we got import prices, which was pretty interesting because the import price index month over month came in at 0.4% positive, which was above the estimate of 0.3%. And the prior was 0.3% as well. When you kind of pull out petroleum, so you look at import prices ex petroleum, they were flat. And they were below the prior of 0.1%. When you look at that on a year-over-year basis, import prices are now positive 0.4%, which is the first time import prices have been positive on a year-over-year basis since January of 2023. So it's been about 14 months since we've been in the positive territory for import prices. I don't know if people want to take that with a grain of salt, but definitely maybe the global inflationary wave is starting to wane a bit. I mean, you see that with some of the other global central banks having already implemented cuts or forecasting cuts sooner than the US Federal Reserve. So that's something to watch and see from my point of view.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it as well. I kind of noticed this when I was giving a macro presentation to some folks up in the Pacific Northwest a few weeks ago. And when you take a look at import export prices, especially particularly the import side, those tend to wiggle and jiggle along with CPI, whereas the magnitude may be different. The overall inflection points tend to lead CPI. I can't remember by how many months or what the period was, but it does lead slightly relative to the S&P, or I'm sorry, versus the CPI component. So the fact that import prices have been trending up on a year-over-year basis doesn't necessarily portend well for the idea of trying to maintain this disinflationary trend that we've seen in CPI. So the fact that it seems to have reached an inflection point in import prices where we're kind of just muddling along the lows right now in terms of CPI on the year-over-year basis, perhaps this portends a pickup in CPI moving forward in the next few quarters or so. But when you take a look at it against each other, the import price tends to fall more into this deflationary, sorry, it tends to fall more into deflationary periods of time versus the CPI. But again, just looking at where the inflection point versus this magnitude or rate of or the deflation versus inflation is more important here. So it'll be interesting to see if this trend continues to hold and if we do see CPI start to rebound higher.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. One other thing just to put into your brain is, there's been the big talk of the China shock 2.0, where, there's a lot of people are worried that China, because of lack of domestic demand, might use excess production capacity to spray goods all over the world at a cheap price. So definitely keep your eyes on import prices. You would definitely see that impact there if that fear comes to transpire. We also got the University of Michigan sentiment information for the April preliminary. It came in at 77, below the estimate of 78, and below the prior of 79.4. So kind of bearish print there. One thing that I like to look at is the University of Michigan inflation expectation numbers, and those came in hotter. The 1 year inflation estimate came in at 3.1%, and the 5 to 10 year inflation estimate came at 3.0%. And, you know, I don't think the Fed only looks at one survey. They don't, but they really do care about inflation expectations being anchored, and they do not want people to think inflation is going to be high, because it creates the self-fulfilling prophecy. And many economic models, you can read many papers about this issue in academia. And so that's definitely, to me, a print that portends for rates being higher for longer, from my point of view.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we used to be somewhat, we didn't pay much attention to it prior to basically this most recent bout of monetary policy in terms of the hiking cycle that we went on in 2022. But, you know, as we've pointed out in the past, this is something that Jerome Powell has pointed, you know, has indicated as being a measure that he looks at, you know, for making his fullness in decision making for how he wants to guide the path of rate policy. This is just one indicator amongst a basket of many, I'd imagine, that he looks at. So with that, you know, we do, it does have increased importance, at least in my eyes, in terms of, you know, looking at this number.
Yeah, and that kind of wraps it up for the week.
Yeah, so with that, in terms of some of the things that we also cover on a weekly basis nowadays is the Fed speak. There was a whole host of talking heads out there that made the circuit this past week. Like most of the times, you know, many times there's nothing really materially different in what they're saying. It's just that these talking heads happen to be on a panel or being in an interview, and they're just basically regurgitating what they've said in the past. But two quotes that kind of stuck out with me came from voting members within the current period for the FOMC. They're both, both are also regional bank presidents. At least Bostic is Rafael Bostic for Atlanta. But he came out and said that basically he was asked the question on whether or not the possibility of having no rate cuts at all in 2024 has increased. This is from a individual who had previously indicated just one 25 basis point cut. And that wouldn't come until the fourth quarter of 2024. But when he was asked about the possibility, given recent inflation prints on no cuts in 2024, he did say that he ultimately thinks that the risks are balanced. And, you know, given that the U.S. economy has been so robust as well as strong, but he did say he can't take off the possibility that the rate cuts may even have to move further out than the fuller, participation of the committee expects, what the market is expecting, and even based on his expectations for no cut until the fourth quarter of 2024. So reading between the lines, that's kind of a roundabout way of answering that, you know, perhaps there is a higher possibility of having no cuts in 2024, at least in his mind. And then secondly, when it came to another notable quote, it was came from this time for I believe his first name's Tom Barkin. And he was asked a question around inflation and rates, and also around the idea of, you know, the last few prints of beats, at least in CPI, two out of three, and PPI, you know, and not making that beat this most recent period, as you just talked about there, Eric. But he did say that you've got to start, you know, in answering this question, when does inflation start to make that case for rate cuts? And then he goes on to say, and unfortunately, the last three prints have not been supportive of that case there. So for him, it does seem like Barkin, who is generally characterized as a hawk, is having a hawkish bias on the FOMC, is kind of also seeing the most recent prints of inflation kind of derailing this idea of even potentially supporting this median cuts of three cuts in 2024, as suggested by the summary of economic projections that just came out this past March. So we'll see how the Fed speak continues to trend based on the incoming data that we have. And then finally, when we take a look at the WIRP function, the World Interest Rate Probabilities function on Bloomberg, with an indication of what the market expects or is pricing in for the number of cuts over each FOMC meeting. It looks like the first cut of 25 basis points is not fully priced in until the September 18th meeting. So June is off the table. And that was one that was, you know, commonly, or that was what held as being the first cut prior to, I want to say, the last 2 weeks or so. But now it's not pricing in until the first full cut's not priced in until September. And when you look at the fullness of 2024, there's fewer than two cuts priced in for this calendar year. It's not until you get to January 2025, the January 29th meeting of 2025, that the market's fully pricing in two cuts of a quarter point each. So with that wrap up of Fed speak, Eric, you want to move on to what things our listeners can keep an eye on?
Yeah, so pretty light week next week. We'll try and wrap this up for you guys. Monday is probably the biggest drop when we get retail sales. And that's the advanced month-over-month print for March. The estimate is for 0.4%. And if you recall, the previous print was very hot at 0.6%. So we'll see if there's some moderation there. Still strong, but maybe some moderation. We're going to get the industrial production number on Tuesday. That's estimated to come in at 0.4%. The prior was 0.1%. We also get capacity utilization. Probably nothing to see there, but something to keep on your radar screen. And we also get manufacturing production on Tuesday as well. Wednesday, we get the Federal Reserve Beige Book. If you're a Fed watcher and you want to do some sleuthing, that could be some bedtime reading for you. And on Thursday, we get initial jobless claims and continuing claims. The estimates are pretty much in line with the prints today at 215,000 for initial jobless claims and 1,825,000 for continuing claims. And lastly, Thursday, we get LEI. It's predicted to dip back into the negative territory on a month-over-month basis. We'll see. It's been a broken clock, and that would wrap it up for next week.
All right. And with that, I wanted to thank everyone for listening out there today. In terms of some of the things that we have coming up that listeners can put on their radar from a double line perspective, double line social media and then also content perspective, we have next Tuesday a webcast by Jeffrey Sherman. It's called, the title of that webcast is Disinflation, Reflation, Bonds for Both. And on that webcast, he'll be talking about our diversified fixed income accounts, the fixed income strategies that utilize the fullness of the multi-sector universe for the fixed income universe there. And with that, it's one of the things that we've been talking about. I've been, you know, saying a lot of it's with the bond market today. There's a little bit of in there for everyone. If you want income above that of the going rate of the, you know, the plain vanilla Bloomberg aggregate, you know, there's something out there, you know, higher income with relatively well-managed risk. There's also, of course, if you want to out generate income in terms of the ag itself, you know, there's also plain vanilla type of intermediate core bond funds that are out there for people. And then if you just want to kind of step out of cash and also, you know, generate yield in excess of what you can get in the T-bill and chill market with managed risk, you know, there's something out there as well. So for those who are interested in hearing more about that, be sure to tune in Jeff Sherman's webcast next Tuesday. You can go on the doubleline.com website and register for that. But that's April 16th for that. And then that webcast as well, if you're interested in hearing our macro thoughts here at Double Line, be sure to tune into that as well. But I wanted to thank everyone for listening to us out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.